Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 7th of September. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about the role of labor in helping to create jobs or asking people who are prominent in labor what they think should happen in this country to create jobs. We have three guests: Sheila Cochran, Chief Operating Officer, Secretary Treasurer of the Milwaukee Area Labor Council. And later in the hour, we'll talk with two of the people who are running for president of the Teamsters. They're having a big debate. Republicans are having a debate, and the Teamsters would be presidents are having a debate in Washington, the Republicans in California. We'll speak with two of the people who are running, and they are Sandy Pope, president of Teamster Union Local 805 in New York City, who's a candidate for general president of the Teamsters, and also joining us, who spent his life in Green Bay, is Fred Jaguer, international vice president of the Teamsters Union and also a candidate for general president. We'll be welcoming phone calls. We'll look at a number of things, the president's remarks in Detroit on Labor Day concerning unions and jobs in this country, what many have called an attack on public workers over the course of the past year, the decline in union membership in this country, and what plans may be afoot to get more people involved in unions. We'll welcome your phone calls, and I would love to have a spirited conversation this hour. Here's how you join us: 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. Our email address, feel free to use that, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Sheila Cochran, Chief Operating Officer, Secretary Treasurer of the Milwaukee County Labor Council, AFL-CIO, is our guest the first part of the program. They combine the organizing and community power of some 52,000 dues-paying members of more than 140 Milwaukee-area locals and parent unions. They were created in the 1950s. And Sheila, thank you very much for being with us. And by the way, I have discovered it is your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you, Kathleen, and good morning.
Good morning to you. Well, let's talk about the president's remarks in Detroit. It was a pretty spirited speech on the part of the president, talking about the importance of unions and the importance of jobs. Did he say something that really caught your interest and say, and it made you say, let's go from here, President, I'm with you? Or were you concerned about what he said?
Well, I have to be honest, we were kind of busy while he was speaking, so I didn't get the opportunity.
You had a big event here in Milwaukee.
Yes, but I have heard small excerpts of it, and I'm going to say, just based on what I would really hope that he would be echoing, that he probably hit the high points of what we need. I still think that one of the largest drains on the economy right now that we don't tend to focus enough on are the wars that we are continuing to fight. I personally think they're very costly. I think they are draining the economy. And obviously, we need to bring our troops home for any number of reasons. But those two wars continuing to go forward are really draining. So I think with that and the continued focus on how to stimulate the economy from via Washington or the state or however we get this economy going are high points that I think need to be hit. And I think it was poignant that he was in Detroit. It's one of my favorite towns, so I'm glad that he was there, and I'm glad that people got an opportunity to enjoy him.
Only to have been surpassed by his appearance in Milwaukee, which didn't happen, right?
I can tell you, having had that honor, I'm glad that he was in Detroit this year.
Tell me, Sheila, what is the role, if any, of unions in this country in helping to create jobs and in helping to fashion what should happen to create jobs?
Well, I think that what people fail to understand about organized labor is it is that group of organized middle-class working people that have the opportunity to bargain with their employers on their wages. So hopefully continuing to raise that wage level, wage the benefit level, raise the economic standard that other Americans can then, balance off on and begin to look at earning power and consumer power. And when that is decreased, you see what you see in this economy now. It has, as you said, fallen off consistently over time. And when our wages continue to erode, so goes the economy. We used to have a lot of unions, mine in particular, the UAW, who were always looked upon as, you know, continuing to bring that up and to set that standard, you know, when we would pattern bargain across auto and bring those wages up. Now, there would be those, and I'm sure some of your callers might argue, well, you know, you're the reason that all the car prices went up. Well, the car prices haven't gone down as the UAW has restructured and reduced their wages. The company is always going to make their money. They're going to figure out how to make it no matter what. And so, be it taking jobs offshore or through poor public policy or however they do it, they're going to get theirs. And I think, at least I would pray and hope that people are beginning to see that our economy is based on not so much a people-driven economy as a more corporate driven economy that really doesn't care how it makes its money, but more how it drains and pulls at every sector in order to keep their profits up. If that continues, and with the people don't wake up to that, then you will see the continual demise of organized labor and such substandard wages here that by the time people wake up and say, well, maybe they were right, they'd have to start from ground zero on organizing and trying to pull it back up. And it's getting harder all the time, but we're still in for the fight.
What do you think? The president's giving a major speech tomorrow, Thursday. What do you think he needs to do to get the incredibly huge number of people who don't have jobs or who are underemployed back to work? It's such an important thing to work. It's just so important to everything. What should he do?
I don't know what he can do by himself. I mean, obviously, we have a divided government by design. But I think when people, you know, go back to our forefathers and what they thought about and what have you, it was divided for balance and not to have the imperial throne just say you will do this, that, and the other, to prevent serfdom. But we have taken divided government, and we have decided how to recreate serfdom. And so the president won't be able to do anything by himself. I think that he needs to be as strong as he possibly can and to really put it in the face of those political parties in front of him, his as well, and say, this is what we really need, and how are you going to help me get it there? And to try and really let the people understand that the opposite of his party is going to do everything within their power, not so much to create jobs between now and the next presidential election cycle, or I should say election day, but to continue to talk about deficits in a country that was built off of debt and not talk about how to build the wealth of that middle class and poor constituents that they both have. And that has to be the theme, or at least in my estimation, that he has to say. He has to really be, I think, powerful in that. He's taken an awful lot of criticism in a lot of different communities about his stances and how well or well not bipartisanship is working for him. And in my head, the first mistake was the stimulus package wasn't big enough. But because of the way Washington is, I don't think he probably could have gotten it any bigger. Given all the other stuff that's been on his plate, he's had an awful lot of things going on. And, you know, it's not a job for one person. I mean, you can't turn this economy around by one person. This is not the first recession I've lived through. And I find it remarkable, absolutely remarkable, that in this recession, the president is fighting against the Republican Party for, you know, every inch of its breath, and to continue to discredit, and the economy is beginning to still falter. And the banks aren't lending that money. I mean, we bail them out. And people don't blame the banks. They're continuing to blame the president. Now, they still want more deregulation. They still want these things. But capital is tight. It has been tight ever since this happened. I've sat through any number of meetings where people have continued to say, we cannot get money for lines of credit. We've got these massive cuts in government spending. We're looking at post office closures in Milwaukee that are going to generate more unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I say poor public policy, the postal system demanding that pensions be paid out 7 years ahead, however, they're going to lay off people and create even more deficit, and create another atmosphere that drains, again, on unemployment and early retirement and all those things that drain against the system. These are people, when I say this, that are looking at this through a purely political lens and not looking at it for the health of the country. And it's the nature of people, especially when they're hurting and they're unemployed, to look at the people in Washington and say, how are you going to help me?
Right.
And the people in Washington are looking at each other saying, how do we defeat this president and get back in office so that we can give the largesse to all of those banks and wealthy corporations? And then the other thing I think that really irritates me is that big business no longer needs the little guy in the United States to make its money. And I think people really need to begin to think about this. Henry Ford created a company and made sure that his workers could buy his product, not because he was so in love with his workforce, but because he realized in order for him to maintain the wealth and the lifestyle he wanted to lead, those people that worked for him had to be able to buy his product to generate that wealth. These guys now don't need this country or its individual workers, most certainly not its poor, to generate its wealth, their wealth. You know, they can afford to toss their largesse every once in a while to the least among us or around, but they don't need it for the wealth anymore. They need it to maintain the names, maybe the structure and where they're from, blah, blah, blah. But they can get their wealth from all over the globe. And until people wake up to that and organize themselves, be it in unions or in other ways, and say, you know, enough of this, and really look toward Washington and say, you know what? What we need for you to do is to fix all those corporate loopholes, demand that our corporations actually stay here, pay their taxes here, and, you know, deal with the workforces here and help build this middle class. This stuff will continue. It's not fair. The tax system is inadequate when it comes down to how it works with companies and corporations. Given all these tax breaks to billionaires and corporations, you know, the Supreme Court has declared that a corporation is a person. Please, there are things here that are very wrong, but the only people that can right it are the people. And they exercise that opportunity every time they vote.
Let's take one phone call for you, and then we'll move to other guests. Andy in Lake Geneva. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Kathleen. Well, what your guest just said here just a few minutes ago, there's certainly a certain amount of truth in that. But the reality is that when UAW was organized back in the 50s, manufacturing was 45% of the GDP. Now it's down to about 9 or 10%. And the reality is that right now we're all rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, and we're trying to close barn doors after the horses have long since left because the world around us has become significantly more competitive. There's no question about it. Unions need to be overhauled, and corporations need to be overhauled. They both need to be overhauled, and probably along with a good debasement of the currency to get us back in a competitive competitive way against the competition, which is all around us. And what your guest just said, there's no question about it. Certain things need to be done in terms of tax code and leveling the proverbial playing field for corporations that are now quite global. But, you know, the unions need to look at themselves also. And if we're looking for class warfare, you know, we're going to wind up getting it. The fellow at the top right now, unfortunately, I don't think he can read a balance sheet, which doesn't help, you know, the cause. But anyway, that's just the comment for the discussion going on here.
Thanks, Andy, for the call. Sheila?
Well, I think I agree with most of what Andy said. Obviously, I mean, there's no disagreement here. And as far as organized labor or unions needing to be overhauled, I can assure Andy that we've been overhauled, worked on, and investigated as much as any organization. There are more rules that govern organized labor than there are that govern those corporations that we're talking about and others. And if he doesn't believe me, all he has to do is live a life as a labor leader trying to just get a message out. I mean, we've been scrutinized, trust me. We have to do a lot of things that an awful lot of other organizations don't have to do. As far as manufacturing, that is my heart, soul, and love. I come out of manufacturing. And I think it's criminal what's been done to manufacturing in this country. I believe that you still have to make something. I think that from the chair that you sit in to the computer that you type on to the car that you drive, some of that stuff, a lot of that stuff, most of that stuff used to be made in this country. We have determined that there are certain things that we don't have to do anymore. Well, the only reason we don't have to do them anymore is because we found some kid in India who can stitch up a soccer ball in a little dirt hut somewhere that our kids might play with. We think that's okay. I don't. I think that's criminal, and I think it's a shame. And it's what we fought against all our lives. So as long as we allow our companies to continue to do that kind of stuff, from the tennis shoes that people wear on their feet to where they drive or whatever else, as long as we continue to allow that, and as long as we think that's okay and turn a blind eye to it, then we'll have what we have. I think that people need to wake up, really pay attention, and look across all sectors, across this entire country, and look at more than balance sheets. Look at how people earn their livings, how they earn their livings, how they do it either safely or not, and the wage that they earn. And by all means, that we begin to value the labor that comes out of the hearts, minds, and hands of people more than we value the dollar. Then I think we'd be in a better condition.
Thank you, Sheila, very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Sheila Cochran, Chief Operating Officer, Secretary Treasurer of the Milwaukee Area Labor Council. We continue our conversation with labor leaders this hour of the program in anticipation of the president's comments tomorrow and also considering what's happened with labor in the state of Wisconsin and in other places in this country. What do people in labor think the president needs to do, the leaders in Washington need to do, to help people find work, to make sure that they are being paid a decent wage so they can support their families? We'll have two guests with us as we continue, and they are both running for president of the Teamsters. They're having a big debate tonight in Washington. One of the people running is from Green Bay, the other from New York City. We'll talk with both of them about their thoughts on creating jobs and the state of the union movement in this country as we continue. And we'll welcome more phone calls. Let me give you our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program today, Buddy Holly, would have been 75 years old today. Our guest has written an incredibly thorough book, not only about Buddy Holly, but the people who admired his work and emulated his work. The book is This'll Be the Day, The Life and Legacy of Buddy Holly. And we'll hear some Buddy Holly music, too. That's our number two. One of our guests now running for president, another we'll meet later this hour, Fred Jaeger, is with us now running for president of the Teamsters. They're having a big debate in Washington tonight. He is from Green Bay, Wisconsin. He has lived his entire life in Green Bay, Wisconsin. He joined Local 75 in 1972 and began an ascent up the union's leadership ladder. He rose through the ranks. He's been a member, a steward, an officer, and a principal officer. He has led a joint council, a national conference, and an industry division, served as a trustee on one of the nation's largest pension funds, and as international vice president. He says that it's time the Teamsters Union had a general president who will fight for members, and he joins us today for part of this program. Hello, Fred. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Well, great. I'm sitting here in Washington, D.C., looking forward to the debate tonight. So getting ready. How are you? How's everything in Wisconsin?
It's a nice day. We need a Brewers win.
Oh, yeah. We need a Packer win tomorrow night.
We need a Packer win. I know you're a Packer fan as well. Yeah. So how many people are running for Teamsters president, Fred?
For Teamsters president, it's the current general president, Hoffa, myself, and a member, a lady at a local 805, Sandy Pope out of New York.
Uh-huh. And do you have a platform? What is making you run for president of the Teamsters, and what would you like for the Teamsters to concentrate on?
Well, we have to stop the war on workers. My platform, Kathleen, is very clear, is run this union from the bottom up. The HOFA has dismantled our union with regards to not servicing the members, as far as I'm concerned. I've been around 35 years plus, as you know. I've been in Wisconsin my whole life, and I gave it 24/7, 7 days a week, for the great Badger State, and representing not only as head of the Joint Council of the State of Wisconsin, but my local union. And what I'm seeing, what's happening, is that the membership is not being serviced. Now, you can talk about the UPS grievance panels where they're losing grievances, hand over fist. There's no militancy with regards to making management live up to the agreement that they agreed to. Hoffa took 40,000 members out of the Central States Pension Fund, which would have been, it's over 40% of that multi-employer fund's income every year. Can you imagine, Kathleen, having to lose 40% of your paycheck? Well, that's what he did to these members' pension fund in Chicago. And he's hiring all these outside consultants to advise him. Jim Hoffa forgot the people that brought him to the dance. And when you lie to me, Kathleen, I take it personally, because it's the members who we take the oath to serve. And when you lie to the members, you take your own city that you're in, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. A few years back, Waste Management came in at the 11th hour, Local 200, and they stripped 240 people from their pension. And the members had no alternative but to take Waste Management on. Now, we had a meeting in Chicago where we were going to extend the picket lines to 15 locations around the country to take Waste Management on to preserve the pension that these people worked so hard for, and worked hard every day to make this company profitable. And what did Hoffa do? He left them on the street. And I always tell the story, Kathleen, is that can you imagine going home after 6 weeks being on the street and saying, the strike is over with, but I got to work the rest of my life because the International wouldn't support us, and that we were trying to fight to preserve our pension. The pension I paid for by taking less on wages and less on benefits that I paid for, Jim Hoffa left us on the street. That is what started me with regards to finding out that this union is being ran from the top down. It can no longer be ran from the top down. It doesn't work. You have to listen, like my Marine Corps days. You got to listen to the boots on the ground. Those are the fighters. And if you stop listening to them, the members are not going to be served. So there's a lot of things that I'm upset about with regards to seeing what's happening with this great organization. And that's why I want to give the members a choice. Kathleen, this is not about me. It's about giving the members a choice. And that's why I'm in this thing to win. And I'm out here campaigning. I'm out here in Washington, D.C. to supposedly was supposed to debate Hoffa, but he chickened out. Now, can you imagine a presidential debate and only having one guy debating himself, a Republican or a Democrat, or a Democrat or a Republican debating themselves? I don't care how you look at it. You're running from the membership, and that's what Jim Hoffa is elected to do, run from his own members because he knows his failed record has finally caught up with him. So there's a lot of issues out there. I look at this thing as a badge of honor with regards to giving the members a choice. And I'm serious. And I can do a lot of good for the membership because I'll get their involvement. As you know from being from Green Bay, my whole career, all I had was my handshake and my word. And I've been very, very successful. In 35 years, I never had opposition, and I find myself in this dilemma with regards to seeing how the international doesn't care about the members. And when I say that, they eliminated the public service division, which we have over 250,000 members in the public service division. You've seen what's happened in Wisconsin with Walker's agenda, stripping collective bargaining. I mean, and if I can, Catherine, you know, one thing that upsets me, and it's never been talked about, is that these public sector workers who are getting shafted by Walker's bill, they paid for their health care coverage by taking less on wages. They paid for that retirement plan by taking less on wages. They paid for those benefits by working with and bargaining in good faith. And we had a system in place. If we couldn't get along with the municipal that we have a collective bargaining agreement with, we could go to binding arm. So, I mean, you know, this was all smoke and mirrors on the Republicans, and when you got outside money coming in to bash everybody, it's criminal to see what Walker did by giving a couple hundred million dollars to corporate America. But, Catherine, why is it we never get corporate America? And when these politicians give them all these tax incentives, why is it they never commit to how many jobs they're going to bring in to the state? Why is it, oh, they're going to create jobs? Create jobs? Those jobs, can you feed a family of two? Can you feed a family of four? Can you feed just a married couple on those jobs? No, because a lot of them lack health care coverage. A lot of them lack retirement coverage. It's a joke.
Fred,
And people got to stop falling for this.
Fred, what are you going to do? What can the Teamsters do? What do you think unions should do to change things around? There are a lot of public sector workers, as you know, who are hurting in Wisconsin right now. They got their first paychecks with all of those having to pay more for all of those benefits, and a lot of people are hurting. I think that's a fact. What do you do about that? People are demoralized. People think, well, this is just the wave of the future.
Well, you've got to have leaders that want to take and educate the membership. And what I would say, and I believe, stop giving money to the politicians. Make them deliver to you. And I'm sick and tired if it's in the Assembly or if it's in the Senate or if it's in the governorship. You go to their town hall meetings. You take them on. You show up en masse and let them know this is the last term you're going to be serving this district. This is the last term you're going to be serving in the Senate. The taxpayer has to get more militant. We're not having good-paying jobs by their bogus programs come into the state of Wisconsin. All we're doing is allowing these politicians to use the middle class as the whipping person. And it's sad because, you know, Kathleen, if you look at who's going to be paying the base property tax, you can't afford it if you're making 30, 40, 50% less out of your paycheck. And these jobs that they're creating are smoke and mirrors.
the good manufacturing jobs. If you take what happened in Wisconsin, first it started with Mercury Marine. What did they do? They played one state against another state. Then who jumped on the bandwagon? I think it was Lee Davidson. What did they do? They threw in the workers. They played one against the other. And what did they? Who came up next? It was the Kohler Company. When I was going out through junior high school, I worked at the Kohler Company enameling bathtubs and sinks. These are all profitable companies that are supported by the taxpayers every day because they work with them, but yet they want to jump on a bandwagon to suppress the middle class.
All right, let's hold you there because we want to get at least one phone call. We have limited time. Fred Jaguar, International Vice President of the Teamsters Union, candidate for general president in Washington for the debate tonight for the presidency of the Teamsters. We go to Malcolm, who would like to speak with you. And Malcolm, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I have kind of a unique perspective when it comes to unions. I worked 10 years as a sprinkler fitter, as you know, non-union before I joined the union. I think one of the big problems that unions have is that they need to do a better job of educating non-union individuals of what they stand for and what the worker can, you know, will gain. Now, in this economic downturn, I'm still a union member of, you know, UA Local 669. But there's, you know, there's no work for us. So now I'm a truck driver, and I can tell you firsthand that the abuses that our truck drivers take, you know, for working in this country. But the biggest thing is that unions need to educate the general public as to what it is they are trying to do for us.
All right, Fred.
Yeah, I agree with Malcolm. He's exactly right, and the only way to educate the public. Run the unions from the bottom up, Malcolm and Kathleen, because if you run the local, if you run the union from the bottom up and you educate your members, they are your best organizer. The members are. But the problem is you've got a twofold situation. That's not happening, and we're losing good tradespeople like Malcolm. He's a plumber, and yet he can't do his profession because he's on the bench. And that's wrong because the economy is bad, and we're not creating good-paying jobs. We're not fixing the housing mess that we have in this country. We're not fixing infrastructure. We're not creating green jobs. Malcolm hit the nail on the head. You got to educate the public. You know, when real quick, Kathleen, when EFCA came up, card checking that, over 70% of the public in the U.S. agreed we should have a right to form or join affiliation of a union of our choosing. That wasn't a fluke. People believe that's your choice. This is America. But this is Malcolm's, this is exactly what Malcolm is saying. You have to do a better job. Nobody should be able to run anything from the top down when the members from the bottom up pay for it.
And finally, if you can do this in about 30 seconds, Fred, what do you want the president to say tomorrow to hear from union members when it comes to job creation in this country?
I want him to say is that the middle class, get the target off their back. I want him to say is that the trade agreements, we've got to concentrate on getting these manufacturing jobs back in this country. And that's what he has to concentrate on, and that's what he has to elaborate to the people, because it'll support our tax base, it'll support our state, and it'll leave the middle class in a position to have a good-paying job with benefits.
Thank you, Fred. Have a good time tonight.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Fred Jaguar, he is International Vice President of the Teamsters Union, current candidate for general president. We will be speaking, the current president is James Hoffa, who will not be appearing tonight at the presidential debate. Sandy Pope will be. Sandy Pope is the first woman to run for president of the Teamsters. She'll be joining us. She's on a train on her way to Washington, D.C., and she'll join us momentarily. And we'll welcome more of your phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. The email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Sandy Pope is joining us now. She is running for president of the Teamsters as well. She's a former truck driver, warehouse worker, and steel hauler, and has been the president of Local 805 in New York City for some time. She was the leading vote getter against Hoffa's slate in the last Teamster election in 2006. And she has, she says, a long and proud history with the Teamsters Union. She's been an organizer, business agent, local union president, and international representative. And she became a Teamster in 1978, worked as a warehouse selector and steel hauler before going to work in the freight industry as a driver and dock worker in Cleveland Local 407. She, as a rank-and-file Teamster, helped organize a successful month-long strike of Teamster steel haulers, an early experience of real Teamster power. She's joining us by phone. She's on a train on the way to Washington, I imagine, Sandy. Are you?
Going to a debate, a candidate debate.
Candidate debate tonight in Washington.
Candidate debate is tonight, yes.
Yeah, thank you very much for being with us, Sandy. Sandy, we're talking with all of our guests this hour about the speech that the president is going to be giving tomorrow night. And I'm interested in hearing your thoughts about how the president should address the issue of joblessness in this country from your union perspective. How do we create jobs?
I think one of the first things we should be doing is creating, is having the government spend money on infrastructure, construction jobs, rebuilding the bridges and the roads, which would not only provide good jobs that have decent wages and benefits, but it would also help businesses by improving, of course, the infrastructure and make them more, make it more efficient. Spending money on low-wage jobs or allowing states to poach each other's companies and lay off workers in one state to employ workers at a lower wage in another state just continues the downward spiral that we've been seeing over the last few years.
You've been in the union movement for a long period of time. Would you say that we're experiencing, those people who are in unions, a real low point?
This is a low point. I lived through the 80s in the Midwest, which was quite bad for those of you, if you're in Wisconsin or and I was in Ohio, and we lost a lot of jobs and with the auto industry and steel industry moving out, and that was pretty devastating. But this is this.
Hello?
And it's all across the country.
Mm-hmm. What's going to change that? How would you change that if you were president of the Teamsters?
Well, I think that one of the ways you jumpstart an economy is by creating demand. And if I think we're going backwards with the idea of reducing spending first before you get the economy going again. So if companies were actually hiring people and putting people back to work, those people would be spending money and paying taxes and keeping their houses afloat and not collecting unemployment, things like that. So that will stimulate the economy because demand is what gets companies going again, not removing regulations and not worrying about whether the richest people get taxed, you know, how much they get taxed. It really is going to be whether we create a demand. So we got to get our companies to hire people, make them full-time instead of all these part-time jobs and subcontractors that we're using, and get people back to work first.
How do you get the people in Washington, I think it was Sheila Cochran who started this show, saying that there are people who are hurting, there are people who need jobs, and they are asking for help. They're asking for not a handout, they're asking for a job. How do you get the focus of the country on jobs instead of on, as it has been for quite some time now, budget deficits?
Well, I'm trying, but I think that the unions really have to use our organization, our grassroots, our national organization, to reach out to non-union workers, to small business people, to independent contractors, to all those people who are hurting as well, and take our case to them to say, look, everyone deserves respect on the job. They deserve decent wages. We're not going to jump start this economy with minimum wage jobs. because that just means that the rest of us are going to be subsidizing people's health care, and people are going to continue to lose their houses. It's not going to change the direction. So we really have to take our case out there, and the unions have appeared to be just out to protect our own people instead of protecting all working people and speaking out for them, which has been our traditional role through the years and certainly in history at the beginning of the union movement.
One of your opponents who you'll be debating tonight was just on the air from Green Bay, Fred Jaeger. He was talking about one of the reasons he was running for president is he wanted to challenge what he called a top-down philosophy in the Teamsters. Would you agree there's a top-down structure and it needs to be bottom up?
Yeah, I agree totally, but Fred has been a part of that top-down structure for the last 12 years, so I'm not sure what's made him change his mind now. I've always been an advocate of bottom-up strategy of the rank and file and grassroots strategy. I believe the strength of the union is in the locals and in the membership, and Fred is pretty Johnny-come-lately on this one.
Sheila also was talking about how people who are not in unions, middle-class people, really benefit if we do have strong unions in this country. I think that a lot of people believe these days that union members have something that they don't have, so they shouldn't have it, that there seems to be, you know, a lot of polarization among workers. Would you like to amplify on what union wages, union bargaining has done for all workers?
Oh, yes. I mean, I represent a lot of workers that are in lower wage industries and warehousing and those sorts of jobs. I mean, workers in the warehouses that I represent have family health benefits that the company pays for, and a union health plan, which is 20% cheaper than a traditional insured plan. Our members get time and a half overtime. I mean, things like that are simple, and but really make a big difference in someone's quality of life. They might make $12, $15 an hour. There's nothing. A lot of people have this impression that all union members have these ridiculous salaries and these gigantic pensions. That's just not true. What it does is give you the ability to bargain with an employer as a group, which is the only, we don't have, we're not million-dollar athletes or multi-million-dollar athletes or media stars or anybody that can bargain as individuals, which all those people do, and they have contracts. We have to bargain as a group, and that's how we can gain something for everybody's good.
Would you like to address what's been happening in Wisconsin the past year?
I think that it's amazing to me how short-sighted people are. I think that elected officials in the states only are looking as far as their own reelection and not in the long term. Again, I lived through the 80s. We all did. We saw what happened with the auto companies and steel and everybody. So short-sighted about what we needed to do for the future. And the same thing is happening now. Laying off teachers, eliminating collective bargaining rights is going to do nothing but continue a downward spiral, which will lower the tax base of the state and increase the amount of foreclosures and things like that. I just don't get why people are doing this. It is wrong. Everyone in this country, it's an American right to bargain collectively, and it shouldn't be withheld from public employees.
And if you had, an increased national presence as president of the Teamsters, what would you do to change that?
Well, we have 250,000 public employees in the Teamsters, and the first thing I want to do is help rally to support them. We need to have national strategies that we can coordinate and fight back against the efforts to turn states into right-to-work states, meaning, you know, to further weaken unions in the private sector and to help take our case again to the public, to the grassroots, to show people how important public education is, to show people how important, their city sanitation services or all those different things, that it actually costs more when you privatize than it does when you have direct employment through public employees. So we have the ability to get the message out, and that's what we have to do.
Let's take a couple phone calls. Sandy Pope is our guest. She's running for general president for the Teamsters. There's a big debate tonight in Washington, D.C., and we're taking phone calls for her right now. She's on a train on her way to Washington. Randy in Key Wascom. Hi, Randy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Realistically, the Teamsters are probably one of the most useless unions out there. I'm a mill caller. Plant I used to haul to had the Teamsters in there. They bought another plant. This plant they closed because of the village worked at 150% of capacity. Now, since they closed that plant, the Teamsters said the people at the other plant that worked at about 75% of capacity had seniority over these people. These people had to go and train these other people and then take whatever jobs were left over.
Where was all of this, Randy?
In Keewaskum.
Keewaskum.
They had the Teamsters pension plan in Keewaskum. Anybody that when it got closed, anybody with less than 7 years in the union lost all of it.
All right. I'm not sure how familiar you are with this, Sandy, but you can...
I've heard stories like this all over the country, and one of the things that, and I wouldn't say we're useless. I think that what we have not done is worked with the locals enough to coordinate and to make sure that they're doing the right thing by the members in terms of defending their contracts and seniority, and also making sure that one local doesn't go against another and undercut standards of other members. So there is I've heard a lot of these stories, and I have advocated for a much stronger coordination between the locals and oversight of contracts in this situation. When I worked for the warehouse division in the international back in the 80s and 90s, in the 90s, we did a lot of that. We were really watching out for undercutting and warehouses moving or blending groups together to make sure that people's seniority rights were honored and that they maintained their pensions.
What are the main issues going to be in tonight's debate, Sandy?
Some of the things you just asked me about, certainly, and about the fact that HAFA has been giving concessions to extremely profitable companies like UPS and looking the other way on contract enforcement on all of our major contracts. And so when he talks tough about jobs, he's really a lot of hot air because he's not protecting our jobs where we do have the power, where we have signed contracts with major corporations like UPS, Coca-Cola, Waste Management, C&S Wholesale, all of whom made huge profits, and we're letting them get away with part-time work, subcontracting, and not honoring major parts of the contract that protect people's jobs and working conditions.
And I've been asking everybody, the candidates and Sheila Cochran earlier, the president spoke in Detroit on Labor Day. What did you make of his speech?
I've been really disappointed in President Obama, and I can only hope that he's going to come through this time. I'm not really very hopeful because I think that Congress is working at cross purposes, and I think it's going to be very difficult to accomplish anything. Politics have gotten so ridiculously partisan that I don't know how we're going to get people pulled together at this point. So while I liked many of the things he said, I don't. I'm skeptical, unfortunately.
One more call. Jeff in Milwaukee. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Regarding the economy, I think the Tea Party leadership and other extreme Republicans have really just hoodwinked and stupid Americans about the benefit of increasing tax, you know, especially on super rich, to stimulate the economy. I think that's what's really lacking here.
Taxing those who have more.
Oh, I'm totally in agreement. I'm furious that my friends we're all getting taxed, but also the smaller businesses and the medium-sized businesses. I represent a lot of family-owned businesses. They're paying their taxes. They're paying their share. And the biggest corporations are getting away with paying almost nothing or nothing at all. and even setting up offshore, I think that's I think it's un-American. I think it's absolutely wrong, and that's where we need to focus our attention first before anything else, is to make sure that everyone's paying their fair share.
You are the first woman, is that correct, to run for Teamsters president? Why did it take so long, Sandy?
Well, we're a very male-dominated union, and when I came up through the ranks, I was the only woman tractor-trailer driver in my local. And, you know, we have elections, and it's a difficult thing to make your way up. You've got to get experience. And so I'm probably in the front line of women officers in this union. There's only a handful of us that are presidents of locals. And our members usually expect the president of the union to have come up through the ranks. That's why it's so surprising that Hoff has had the support he's had.
Have fun tonight.
Okay,
thank you
very much.
Thanks for being with us. Sandy Pope, running for president of the Teamsters. The debate is tonight. She's president of Teamster Union Local 805 in New York City. Thanks to Sandy, to Fred Jaeger, International Vice President, also running for General President, and to Sheila Cochran, Chief Operating Officer, Secretary Treasurer of the Milwaukee Area Labor Council. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program, to Chrissy Pease for on-air production in our downtown Milwaukee studios. We have another hour coming up.